This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Welcome, Jody.
Thank you very much, Greg. It's great to be here again on Joy this gorgeous Saturday here in Melbourne.
And it's beautiful. But I don't know if it's beautiful all the way across Victoria because the change sort of hits in different fashions. But some people love weather.
Yeah.
Exactly. Over in Ballarat, we've got Philip Colasanti in Ballarat. What's it like in Ballarat, Phil?
G'day, Greg. It's pretty good, actually. It's a bit overcast, but it's still actually quite a nice actual morning, to be honest with you. Yeah.
What takes a group of gay men to Ballarat on a Saturday morning?
We thought we might just go down one or two mine shafts, see what it's all about.
Well, make sure you come back up again.
Well, we'll try our bit. We'll see what happens with all the pumps and everything else that goes on here at Sovereign Hill. So, yeah, we've just decided to do a day out. There's actually about 12 of us here today, so we thought we'd just go out and enjoy ourselves and see what's going on here in Ballarat.
Do you know, some like me haven't been to Sovereign Hill for 20 years. What's it like these days, Phil?
Well, to be quite honest, Greg, I haven't been here for about 15 years myself. The family was raised here, so coming back here, I've seen so many different things. They've got a pump room that's just, you know, got all new bits and pieces in it. They've got the $50,000, I think, of gold bullion always melted down and then re-put together, so that's something new. We're actually about to go down into one of the mines. It's actually called Trap, so it's a new mining tour that we're just about to go down and have a look at. It's actually based on a true story that happened here in country Victoria about one of the worst mining disasters that ever happened. So we're all kind of interested in looking at that. But look, there's so much to see and do up here, it's hard to sort of like pinpoint one thing to another. So out of the 14 of us, we've got about three groups going all different directions. So some are doing the mine shaft, some are panning for gold, some are just looking at all the odd exhibitions, and of course everyone's getting their candy and lollies to suck on.
Ah, now that's actually one of my favourite things, ye olde shoppy lolly shop.
But yeah.
Philip, I'd love you today, on behalf of the Detours crew, to head along to the afternoon tea place and have some scones and jam on our behalf, if you don't mind.
Thank you very much. If I remember, that's the good old New York Bakery as well.
That's
where
correct.
They do afternoon tea, yes. So, no, we might head off there afternoon, but I think some of the boys may head off to the pub for one or two ales at the same time. So. But look, I've got the boys coming out of the engine house and we're just about to start this tour.
Well,
so look,
you go and enjoy, but as a chef, Phil, don't be too critical on the scones that they make.
Look, I won't be. I'll keep my mouth closed. So we'll see how it all goes for the day, guys. But look, all the best to Joy and have a great weekend to everyone.
Philip Colasanti out in Ballarat, thanks for joining us on Detours.
Thanks, Greg. Take care.
Bye. Jody, that's fabulous, isn't it? I mean, Ballarat, the Sovereign Hill Park, what a great theme park to go to for Victorian regional tourism. In fact, there's more right around the state.
There really is, and I think the key to a really good attraction is about having something that is a new experience each time you come back. And I think we should actually get Jeremy Johnson here, who's on the chairman of VTIC, the Victorian Tourism Industry Council, who's also the CEO of Sovereign Hill, and we'll find out a little bit more.
Now, joining us shortly, we have a fabulous guest all the way from New York who, I mean, we've just had a chef and his mates, gay mates from Melbourne visiting Sovereign Park. We're about to have someone that has some interest in the food area himself all the way from New York shortly. So will we tell people his name so they can tune in for him in a few minutes?
Yeah, we can. His name's Evan. He's going to be joining us here very shortly on the Detours Travel Show. And remember, we're right with you until 1 o'clock today. And if you've got any questions, queries, suggestions, you're welcome to email us at onair@joy.org.au or you can SMS us 0427JOY949 or that's 0427569949. And that That was New Shore by Don Connolly here on Joy 94.9. This is the Detours Travel Show with Jodie and Greg, and we have a fabulous guest who's come all the way from New York for our interview. Well, he was here already and he just happened to come in and want to talk.
I will have him.
We will. So, Evan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, you've travelled a number of times back and forth across the Atlantic. How many times have you been to Australia?
I think I've been here probably 7 times.
That's extraordinary. Yeah. That's extraordinary. Yeah.
How do you manage to do it to so many trips?
Well, I travel a lot for my job, and so my life is similar to that movie Up in the Air. So when I travel for my own holidays, it's pretty much covered by all the reward points I earn from my regular job.
Let's just clarify that, though. The George Clooney character, his job was firing people in mass numbers around the U.S., is that your job as well?
Thankfully, no. So that aspect of the movie doesn't apply to me, but the travel part does. So I do go to some hotels where they do know me by name or face, and so it's interesting in that respect.
Do their knees shake as you're coming in the door, Evan? Is there a two-sided Evan? We see the beautiful Evan here with a smile.
Sometimes there are some hotels where they know I'm on to the games they play, and so when they see me coming, they know that they better get their act together.
Good.
So, not having travelled a lot for my work, other than, you know, the occasional conference, what are some of the games that the hotels play that you're onto?
Well, when you're a frequent guest, they have tiered rewards, and when you're the top level in some hotel chains, they're supposed to give you a suite upgrade and some other amenities, and what they'll tell you is, oh, the hotel is full and there's nothing available and I'm already connected to the internet. I'm like, well, that's funny, you're still selling all these other rooms. And all of a sudden I hear crickets, and then they finally realize that the jig is up and that they better stop playing games.
It's good to be on the ball, isn't it? Now, your voice is traditional New York, isn't it? In fact, it's almost Manhattan. Your voice is...
I do have that talk and coffee kind of accent. So, yes, I guess it is considered classic New York.
What's it like making the jump to Australia? It's a different culture.
Yes and no. I mean, there's a lot of American influence and a lot of things I see from home. So if I'm flying on the plane, I see a lot of American movies, and I do see a lot of brands here that I see at home. So I do see a lot of influence, but there is a lot of difference in choice of words. So even though we both speak English, your English is more influenced, I think, by British English and then your own local slang that we don't use. And so I do find that interesting.
It is fascinating, isn't it, when there's a commonality of English. I was speaking with some international students the other day about the new Mikey ticketing system, which is a new public transport ticketing system, and saying, well, you know, what are some of the things that concern you about this? And they said, what does top on, top off, and, you know, like, and validate your ticket? They'd never heard of it before. So we were just sort of assuming that people understand what we're talking about.
Some of it seems formal, like you'll say docket, and in the States, docket to us is a legal term, like in a court proceeding, and they'll ask for a docket number. So those types of things I find amusing.
And have you been working in Australia on this trip, or this is just for leisure and pleasure?
Just for leisure and pleasure.
Mm, good one.
Leisure and pleasure.
Leisure.
Or as we say in the US, we say vacation.
Oh, yes, of course.
Now, John's not with us today.
Right.
There's a reason behind it. It has to be a reason. When two New York men come to Melbourne and go out and one shows and one's in bed, tell us about that story.
I think that he took a liking to the beer a little too much.
Oh, okay.
When he realized that it's more than just Foster's here, that you do have a wide selection of delicious beers.
Did you really come here thinking there was just Foster's?
My first trip, yes. So I'm embarrassed to say that when I came here, the first thing I did was ask for a Foster's, and I was practically laughed out of the bar, not knowing better. So I learned my lesson very quickly.
Yeah, there's a wide range of microbreweries as well in Victoria, sort of niche little small boutique type beers as well.
And you can actually visit them and drink the beers there next to virtually where the vats are brewing the beers. Fabulous stuff.
So, Evan, what else have you done whilst you've been in Australia for this trip?
Well, we got the longest part of the trip over with first. So we flew from JFK through LA to Sydney and changed planes right away and went right to Broome. So they had a nonstop flight that we were able to get right from Sydney to Broome, and we got off the plane and we roasted right away. So we wanted to have some recovery from the long trip, so we relaxed there for a few days.
Now tell us about Broome. I mean, many of our listeners haven't yet visited Broome, fabulous destination. First of all, how did you choose Broome? What came to put that pin on the map for you guys?
Well, I had been there before, and John had not, and I thought it would be an interesting thing for him to see, because I think very few Americans go to that part of the country, and so when I heard about camel rides and Cable Beach, I said, this is a unique opportunity to tell everyone back at home, wow, we've been on a camel and done all these things, and when we sent the pictures back home, people were just absolutely amazed.
Yeah, there's some amazing history actually about camels in Australia. There's an exhibition on at the moment at the Melbourne Immigration Museum about how camels came to be in Australia, because they're not native indigenous species. And the pioneers, the Muslim pioneers who actually did exploration in the outback. So if you get a chance to go and see that exhibition, it's at the Melbourne Immigration Museum.
And I was shocked because our guide with the camel rides told us that camels originated in North America. And that just shocked us both, because I always thought they came from the Middle East.
Wow. How's that? So you're a meeting of two North American immigrants, hey?
That's right.
Everyone's. Now tell us about, I want to unpack a little bit about Broome, about Cable Beach. Some sights, some smells. What was it like for you on the second visit? But what was it like remembering back to the first visit too?
I just remember how hot and humid it was, and that even though it's cloudy, you still need to wear a hat because you will get burnt through the clouds, and that's something that really surprised me. So,
and Cable Beach itself, are we talking about a small beach, a wide beach?
It's very long. I think it's in kilometers, at least 20 kilometers long. So it's very long and narrow and pristine. It's white sand and just clear water. It's unspoiled and beautiful. And I don't see too many beaches like that.
Yeah.
I think that's somewhere I'd like to go.
I can see you, Jodie, on a towel with a book, hat over, you know, with corks off your corner of your hat over there.
Oh, that,
relaxing.
Yeah, I've heard that it's a really gorgeous destination. And what sort of foods did you enjoy when you were there?
We went to a local brewery, and there was a restaurant and brew house in one. And so we tried their local brews, and the most interesting one we had was a chili beer. So that took us by surprise, but we tried the sampler, not a whole pint. Because if we had a whole pint, I think we'd probably be on fire. So it was very, very spicy.
But of course, the top end of Australia has such a really melting pot of cultures, a particular influence from Asia. So did you experience that when you were there?
We did. We saw a lot of cultures there, and we were surprised to learn that the downtown, or I guess that's an American term, the city center is called Chinatown because of its history in the pearling industry. So that was fascinating to see that, and the different names of the streets and the shops available along the I think it's Carnarvon Street. I'm not good with the pronunciation.
No, you're doing pretty good. Hey, with the shops, now we had a question earlier from one of our listeners, Chris, who's asking how do people, when they're travelling, lock in the fantastic exchange rates that you get at the moment between the Aussie dollar, the euro, and the Aussie dollar and the US dollar? How do you, when you're travelling, and how do you lock in the exchange rates to your advantage?
I haven't been as fortunate with that. So the last time I was here was in December of 2008, and the exchange rate for me was a lot more favorable than it is now. So I didn't bank that and save it for now. I pretty much go with the market. But what I do try to do is avoid unnecessary fees. So what I use a local bank in New York that gives you the true exchange rate when you use your debit card. So that's the first thing I do to avoid that. And then when I'm here, I look for machines that don't charge any extra on top of that. So that helps a lot.
Yeah, you really have to do your research about that to find out, you know, the fees of when you withdraw and even fees to do transfers. There's, you know, if it's via SMS or BPAY or EFT or all the different types of transfer, that some of them actually also take a couple of days sometimes to load onto your account. So you have to be mindful of that. But I like your idea of using the debit card.
When you say debit card in the US, is that like a savings debit card or is it a Visa debit card?
It's a Visa or MasterCard debit card that's linked to your checking account. I'm okay. Assuming you use a similar term here for that type, or current account. And so that's what it would be linked to. And you could either use the ATM to withdraw money or sign your name. But the EFTPOS that you use is not compatible with ours. So if we try to enter a PIN, it would be rejected over here.
Now, I ask that because the big disaster that's just happened is a number of major retailers have got together, including Woolworths Safeways here in Australia. And if you attempt to use an Australian Visa debit card, they won't let you use the debit facilities. That they want you to either use savings or they want you to use credit cards, but they won't now now allow Visa debit cards. I'm not sure whether that'll apply to foreign Visa debit cards. What it is they're trying to avoid having to pay fees.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Now, that's going to affect a lot of people that travel, that if it does affect overseas ones, but it certainly will affect Australian Visa debit cards, won't it?
Sure will. Yeah. If you've just joined the program, we're speaking with Evan from Manhattan here on Joy Melbourne, and this is the Detours Travel Show with Jody and Greg, and it's 25 past 12.
Joy 94.9. Real voices, real good radio.
Welcome to the Detours Travel Show here on Joy 94.9. I'm Jody, joined by Greg, and we'll be with you right up until 1 o'clock today. That gorgeous track was called Mexico, also by Dom Cooley.
We'll play one more of his music.
We will.
It's beautiful music.
Very, very mellow for a nice Saturday afternoon. And we're joined here in the studio by Evan, who's flown all the way from New York, Manhattan to join us. Well, he was here on holidays anyway. Now, you travel enormously for work. What sort of work do you do that enables you to travel so much?
What's called a food safety auditor, but when most people hear that term, they think I work for the government, and I don't. I work for a third party, so we're invited in by different manufacturing plants that take and process food that in turn goes to a restaurant. So I pretty much partner with them and do an inspection and audit their management systems and in an educational way to help them better themselves with risk management, so that way we all have safe food.
I love it.
It's exciting.
I think if I went down that path in a career, I would find it hard to eat anywhere because I'd be looking out all the time for the telltale signs of poor food hygiene.
I think sometimes I have to turn that hat off when I go to a restaurant. But as far as what I do, it's like living that show. There's a TV show on the U.S. cable channels, I think it's on Discovery, called How It's Made, and they take you to different factories. And so that's pretty much what my life is like when I go to work.
Do you know, you'd be able to transfer your skills straight across and run restaurant chains. I mean, you'd have those skills to be able to have first-class restaurants operating at a peak.
I guess I could, but it is a little bit of a different model in a large manufacturing plant than on the retail level, where there's individual people preparing the food for the consumers.
So when you said you turn off when you go to a restaurant. Are there times, though, when you actually do see things in restaurants?
I do. Like, I might go to a sandwich shop and I get a little annoyed if I see them wearing those protective gloves and handling money, because it defeats the purpose, or if they go wash their hands and they're not even using soap, or they have a cut on their hands. So, yeah, those things do irk me.
Yeah, me too. Actually, talking about food, coming up after our program today at 1, we have Pete Dillon with Cravings. And on the show, he has Matt Preston from MasterChef, Jake Nicholson, who's a chef from Circa at the Prince, and Kylie Vowles, who's also co-hosting from Wine Food Hotel. So there is food coming up later. How do you plan all of these trips that you do, Evan?
Well, for leisure, I use the FlyerTalk.com website, which is an excellent resource for all travelers, whether it's the GLBT community or the mainstream community, everything, because on there is what's called forums, and there are every frequent flyer program you can think of, every hotel program, all kinds of promotions and deals that you could take advantage of, and it's just a really nice spirit of community there where people share ideas and information, and there are actually official representatives from all those frequent flyer and hotel programs that post on there because they know that community is so large and that things posted on there can have such an influence on travel decisions.
That's incredible. So that's flyertalk.com. We'll put that up on the Facebook site for Detours.
And some of the special interest groups, of course, which is pleasing to see, that the top one is GLBT, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, travel, and then women travel, travel with pets, travel with children, disability travel, religious travel. So there's special forums there. And, you know, there's huge numbers of posts. Say, the forum for gay and lesbian travellers, there's 49,000 posts there. So that's obviously a good resource for you in terms of your planning.
Absolutely. It's a very active community, and there are people from all over the world. There's definitely a large Australian population that reads and posts to the boards as well, and they have plenty to say about your local airlines here as well. So there's a lot of resource for anyone around the world.
Now, have you ever had some advice advice from one of these travel forums that hasn't proved true? Or you've been able to go back on and update the information you've had with the facts?
I do, because it's dynamic and things change from time to time. Maybe a certain hotel had a bad reputation, but the staffing's changed. Or maybe they read something on Flyer Talk and made a positive change as a result of that. So that's influenced my decisions, or I've posted feedback on that as well. So when I've gone to a city and I said, you know what, it really wasn't that way, so I'll let everyone know. So it is interesting, though, that it does have a lot of influence.
That's a really amazing tool. I was just reflecting on when I arrived in London for the first time and didn't have accommodation booked. So I came from Heathrow to Victoria Station, and, you know, there's lots of touts trying to sell you accommodation. But I thought, I'll go to a reputable, large financial institution that had a travel booking service. And the accommodation was just appalling. And, you know, I really, like you, felt in the spirit of goodwill, I need to actually go back and say, I don't think you should be recommending that, because the shower just was like a hose out of the wall.
Oh,
no nozzle or anything. We had to ask them to put on the heat, but they said, "Well, just put on more clothes."
That's unacceptable.
Exactly. So I think you've got to let people know where they can improve.
Absolutely.
Now, you've had some experience, I think we'll be interested in listening, between first class fares and travel and economy travel, but comparing America and Australia.
I would say that the service level on the Australian airlines as well as the hotels is far superior than what I am used to in North America. I think it's just a whole different model over here, and it's just a pleasure coming over here and experiencing all that. Now, when I come over here, I'm doing it on rewards, so I'm not wealthy where I can actually afford those retail prices of the first class, but I am fortunate enough to redeem frequent flyer miles and experience it and compare the difference, and it's just absolutely lovely over here.
So what do you experience? What are your experiences in first class?
In first class on a plane internationally, they make your bed. They put a duvet.
Hold on, there's a bed to start with. I mean,
there's a fully flat bed. They're specially trained, and they anticipate your needs. And the most amazing thing is you don't have to ask anything. They know you from the start. They know who you are. They know what you like, and everything is just anticipated. And it's amazing.
Now, I know that envy is a sin, but I'm very envious, and I would love to come travelling with you to be in that pointy end of the plane one day.
You know, but most of us, and our listeners, we won't experience first class travel. It's just not going to be on our calendar, is it?
No.
So, Evan, you're envious. I mean, we're envious of you, and you're not getting out of this studio alive.
But I'll live vicariously through what you're talking about. When you're planning your trip, Evan, you mentioned flyertalk.com as a great community resource.
Right.
How do you actually then go about booking it? Do you book it online or use a travel agency?
I usually use the online tools, and since I'm using reward points and things like that, I'm normally going to those hotel or airline sites directly or their partners and then booking with them rather than using a traditional travel agent. Normally, travel agents are for revenue type of bookings and also for people that might not feel comfortable navigating the internet on their own.
And in America, do you find travel agents charge a booking fee, or are they still getting commission? How's it structured there? Because in Australia, they've removed commissions from most travel agents, so they if they're not part of the big airlines or the big corporate players, they have to charge a $20 or $50 booking fee on top of the booking to make their profit.
I think that's a similar model worldwide. I think that happened after 9/11, as we say, in the States, where airline travel had dropped for a while. There were a lot of losses, and the whole model changed. People started buying tickets directly on the airline websites, and so they realized how much money they can save. And since then, travel agents have been charging fees. And I see that not only with personal travel agents, but I think I see that with corporate travel agents, too. There's some kind of set fee they pay for everything.
It'd be really interesting to see the fallout of the Icelandic volcano on the tourism and travel industry globally. When the flights were grounded, there was something like 120,000 flights in 1 week in the world that were cancelled. It's an amazing volume, isn't it?
I was amazed, because that was the day I had to fly over here, and I heard from some people, wow, you're very lucky you're going the opposite direction. And I was actually in a lounge where 90% of the flights were going to London. And so there were just a few of us there, and they were on partner flights that were going the completely other direction. So I just felt very fortunate I was unaffected by that.
We do have volcanoes in this region too, Evan, so keep your fingers crossed. Otherwise, you might be staying here for a while longer. We have them all across the Pacific, New Zealand, Vanuatu, all those different places, but they're not like Iceland.
I think it's just phenomenal. I mean, I feel like it's like seeing Halley's Comet or something. I mean, even though I didn't see that, the Icelandic volcano. It's just phenomenal that a natural disaster could have such a huge ramification for trade, for importing of flowers, for, you know, people's own lives and journeys. And
a ripple-on effect. I mean, the halfway destinations, the Bangkoks and the other places, suddenly all out of accommodation, all out of available accommodation, and the infrastructure to support people with food and meals, all pushed to the limit. Amazing, isn't it, that ripple effect through the travel sector?
We'd love to hear from you, actually, if you were impacted by this and to share your experiences. You can email us at onair@joy.org.au or you can SMS 0427JOY949.
And if you're stranded in Melbourne, we'll put some stretchers out in the Joy Foyer for you.
Oh, we'll take you out for a coffee, show you around. Don't be lonely and stranded in a big city.
Now, in a little bit, we'll actually hear not just from Evan, but from Stuart, who brought Evan into the studio today. Now, Stuart, we briefly heard when Svein and Elkin were in from Norway. So, coming up very shortly, we'll reintroduce Evan and we'll hear from Stuart.
Here on Joy.
Because the tempo slows us down.
Hola.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Muy bien, ¿y tú?
Bien. Aquí pasándolo muy bien aquí en Melbourne.
Oh, yes, we love being in Melbourne. Oh,
yes, we do.
It's Svein and
Elkin
from Oslo and
Colombia.
Traveling all the way down to Melbourne just to be here on Detours on Joy 94.9.
Sí, cada vez que venimos aquí a Melbourne tenemos que visitar Detours Joy 94.9.
To say, pinga.
Verga. Polla. Que rico, papi.
Ah! Oh, they're very naughty boys, aren't they?
I've got no idea what they're saying, and I don't think I want to know. This is the Detours Travel Show here on Joy with Jodie and Greg. We're with you right up until 1 o'clock today, but of course, stay tuned. There'll be Anthony with the news, and then there will be Cravings with Pete Dillon. He's got Matt Preston from MasterChef, Jake Nicholson from Circa at the Prince, and he'll be co-hosting with Kylie Vowles from Food Wine Food Hotel. If you've just joined the program, we're speaking with Evan from Manhattan, New York, and his friend Stuart, who's also joined us in the studio. Stuart, how do you guys know each other?
I think I first met Evan in, I think it was December 2000. I was in London at the time, and I guess a mutual friend, Ben, we travelled together over to New York, and Ben and I caught up with Evan and spent some time with him. I think it was just in the run-in to New Year's Eve. Which was fantastic. And then I think from there, I would have been in New York, I think probably 2005, and caught up with Evan again. And then since then, Evan's been in Australia a few times. In that 2005, when I was in New York, I also met John, who unfortunately is a little bit worse for wear after a pretty big explosive night last night. But perhaps we shouldn't go there just right now. And so then hence Evan's here. And then I think Evan's off to Canberra and then Sydney. And so I'll join them again in Sydney in a few days' time.
Sounds very good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And your connection as well with the two boys we just heard there, Svein and Elkin.
Oh, two very naughty boys there,
yes,
I think.
Yes, you're the reason that they come and they actually listen to Detours all the time now while they're overseas web streaming from Norway. So hello, boys in Norway.
Yeah, hi, Elkin. Hi, Svein.
So maintaining a friendship when you meet people and you continue to have that relationship while you travel on and your life goes on, you guys have actually maintained your friendship for some time, haven't you?
Certainly have. I think it's a different type of friendship. I mean, you talk about people here that you might catch up with on a weekly basis or every couple of weeks or weekends. When it's halfway around the world, it's a little bit different. But tools like, you know, or net sites like Facebook and emails and sort of things allow you to sort of keep in touch and keep that continuity of what's going on in people's lives, and also that expectation that, you know, if Evan's going to rock up and say, hey, Stu, I'm on your doorstep, can I have somewhere to stay? Yeah, it's expected, and vice versa. Or I think last time I was there, it was a lot of a message and say, hey, what are you up to tonight? I'm in New York. Do you want to catch up for dinner? It's like, what the hell are you doing here?
Fantastic.
So it kind of happens like that, really.
Yeah, I have a lovely friend, Linda Bates, who I hope is listening from Scotland, who's coming out to Australia in September, and we'll have to get her on the program. She's been on in the past, but we had that lovely introduction through a mutual friend, and we've all remained continued friends beyond that. And you know, you just know that you do have friends that you could call on if you needed, and that if you did arrive and or if something happened, you could, you know, they'd help. And I think that's a very reassuring aspect of life, isn't it?
Absolutely. And then you introduce, obviously, friends of friends, and that extends the network. It's like just one giant global network, if you like.
And a friend of mine, whose daughter was going on her first overseas trip, was thinking, oh gosh, what happens if she gets stranded or stuck? I said, here's Linda's number. And sure enough, she needed it. And, you know, that she was in a bit of having a bit of a cultural meltdown. And, you know, she took her in. She made sure she had somewhere to stay, took her out for dinner. You know, it's lovely.
But that's like extending anonymous couch surfing into our networks of friends. And our friends then extend to other friends. So it's not an anonymous bedroom or lounge room you're sleeping in. It's a mate's place.
Absolutely. It's fantastic.
Yeah, which is pretty good. Now, you're a couch surfing fan, couch surfer extraordinaire, aren't you?
Well, no, not. I haven't actually done it myself. I've read about it, and we've had guests talk about it themselves. I've just moved into a two-bedroom apartment, and I am planning to utilise my spare room as, you know, an opportunity to meet people from all around the world and offer that hospitality. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'll have to report back on the experiences.
Now, would you do that, Evan? Would you be couch surfing at all in your travels where you didn't have the frequent flyer points to put you up in a good hotel?
I think there was a time where I was doing that a lot, and now I have so many points and bonuses coming out of my ears that I wind up doing that for now and sharing that with other people that I travel with or that happen to join me along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good, isn't it? What about you? Are you a frequent flyer traveller, Stu?
Oh, I don't earn anywhere near enough points to be able to do that, I'm afraid. Most of my travel here is on budget airlines.
And there is nothing wrong with budget airlines.
Absolutely, absolutely not. But when travelling, it's either staying with friends where I can. It just seems. But I think it's also the experience. People have stayed with me before, and Elkin and Svein, we after they came on radio last time, we went to the Gold Coast and to Sydney, and there were five or six of us, and it was just an experience. They came back and said, wow, that's the best trip I've ever had. And I was like, well, that's fantastic. But I think it's the people that make it, and it's the experiences you have. And you don't get that, and no offense, Evan, by sitting by yourself in a hotel room and not knowing anybody and mixing with the local culture. So I think it helps you immerse yourself into that mix.
And, of course, the benefit is when you do have the friendships outside, you can then sort of, you know, have a base and then come back to it and play and do your thing. And that's a good way to travel too.
Mm. Now, Evan, one of our previous guests, Philip Glover, asked questions of us during the week about whether you have stopovers along the way when you do big trips. Particularly, he was thinking about to Europe. Do you stop over at Hong Kong? When you're going from America to places like Australia, how important are stopovers? Do you build them into your travels?
I used to stop over on the West Coast and try to get a little bit of time to recover, but after doing it so many times, I wanted to just get the whole flight over with in one go, so I stopped doing that on the West Coast and just came straight to Australia and acclimate myself to the time right away. But there are some other times where I've done some stopovers in places like Alaska, which is one of my other favorite places.
Ooh.
To go.
Alaska.
I'd like to know more about Alaska.
Yeah.
Alaska is amazing. If you overlaid that state over the contiguous 48 states, or as they say in Alaska, the lower 48, it takes up a third of that, which it's just unbelievable how big it is. And it's so different in different parts of the state. I mean, there's Arctic regions up in the north, the Aleutian Islands all the way out, where there's so much wind that a large metal dumpster can get blown across the road like a piece of paper. So
is that why Sarah Palin's IQ is spread so thinly?
I would say that, yeah, from Nome, which is 1,200 miles away from Anchorage and Wasilla and all that, yeah, I guess there is a lot of that.
Have you been to Wasilla?
I've been to Wasilla.
What's it really like from, you know, fresh eyes going to town?
It's interesting. It's changed now from the first time I was there in 1999. Back then, it was not much going on there. There's been a lot of development there now, a lot of new stores and houses being built, and so it's very different now. But we went up there originally because the bars in Anchorage had closed at a certain time, and people said, oh, well, we'll just drive up to Wasilla and continue. So that's what they were known for.
I would love to go to Alaska. That's definitely on my list of must-dos.
which is pretty good. We've had a message in from Aaron, I think, talking about the couch surfing shows.
Yeah, and Aaron said that he quite amazed about, I guess, the friendship and goodwill of people offering somewhere else to someone who's a stranger to come and stay, and he thinks that couch surfing might be kindness in must be in the older and mature generations. Actually, there's a real spectrum of age groups of people who do it, but he says it's great to hear people still have compassion. So thanks for listening, Aaron.
And our good mate Brian Thacker. Brian, I don't think Brian Thacker would like to be known as the older generations.
I think he, yeah, but I think
how
it
contemporary.
Is. It is interesting though. Some people probably wouldn't term it couch surfing as a formal sort of thing, but you know, they just say, oh, I have friends come and stay, or, you know, but couch surfing is really, you know, people who don't necessarily know.
Which is not bad. Now, you're preparing your next leg of your journeys, I think, to leave Australia and head off, but you've got other parts of Australia to see first. So what are you going to see in the next stage of your journeys, and where are you going after that?
After Melbourne, I'm going to be going off to Canberra, and I didn't realise when I planned it that it was going to be over Anzac Day, so I guess we'll have an opportunity to probably see a big parade when we're over there, so we're going to see that, and then from there hop over to Sydney. And then from there, go to New Zealand and see a bit of Auckland.
Ah, fantastic. And what, Auckland, see a bit, is it unplanned? You're just rocking up at the airport?
No, we planned that. So this is all part of our big trip. We planned that part in advance.
Now, one last question before we finish up for both Stuart and Evan. When you're traveling so much, how do you organize your travel insurance?
Well, that's something that I haven't done, which I probably should in the future, because in case there is something unexpected, whether it's medical, I should have something and I haven't before. So that is a big risk I took, and that in the future, I probably will set something up with that. But as far as the other arrangements, since I did a lot of travel on points, there wasn't as much of a risk as if I paid a lot of money for a ticket that I couldn't get refunded. So as you mentioned, that would be a good idea if that were the case.
And from my perspective, I guess there's two aspects. It depends where I'm traveling to. So it's a number of the credit cards have the reward programs. The insurance programs, which offer that sort of insurance, which is great. But you've got to be very careful and read the fine print, because some of them, for example, offer travel accident, i.e. if a plane falls out of the sky, versus medical, which I think is the most important one. I don't know if you've ever had to go to a doctor in the US, but there goes $200 or $300 just for a checkup or for something to see them. So I think that's really important, particularly if you're going to parts of Asia or that sort of thing, immunization, all that sort of thing. So it's just a matter of understanding what the risks are and then weighing that up. There are also places out there that have like multi-policy discounts. So if you're a frequent traveller, if you travel with work, often there are a work program. So it's just a matter of investigating what the options are, understanding the risks, and then making a decision.
But with the volcanic activity in Northern Hemisphere, some people are finding their airlines are covering some of the costs, but others are stranded without any coverage at all. I mean, I heard someone at Lufthansa the other day, a passenger of Lufthansa, swear black and blue they never use the airline again. They're just not covered, and they've got to make their own way to hotels, book themselves in, no coverage. But some of the budget airlines are putting people up and providing meals and accommodation and transport backwards and forwards.
And of course, there's some people who literally have only enough money in their pocket at the airport to buy a can of Coke, and then on they go. So I think that, to me, says that it is important to have a buffer, and you've got to read the fine print, as you say. I think it's also worth checking your own credit card policies, and if you book your travel arrangements on a particular card, there might also be some conditions that will enable you to access travel insurance. But once again, you've got to look really carefully, make sure you're actually getting covered for something worthwhile.
Well, it's been fabulous having you here today, Evan.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for bringing him in, Stuart. That's
you're
great.
Welcome, Greg.
Yeah. And plans for the rest of the day?
Well, we were going to probably go down to one of those microbreweries you mentioned earlier, but with John being unwell after last night, maybe we're going to need to try and change those plans around.
Might be able to enjoy some good Melbourne coffee. Stay tuned for the news coming up at 1 o'clock, and then, of course, Pete Dillon with Cravings here on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au. Joy 94.9. Real voices, real good radio.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.